Thank you so much for listening to this pre-recorded episode of Pub Talk Live. To find out more about the show and find out how you can watch live, go to pubtalk.live. Thank you so much to my Patreon podcast sponsors, Brenda Drake, Jay Lynn, and Reframe. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the July 28th episode of Pub Talk Live, the live publishing talk show, airing the second and fourth Saturday of every month at 9 p.m. Eastern. I am your host, Sarah Nicholas. I'm a young adult author, a board member and agent liaison for Pitch Wars, and a library event planner. I'm super excited for today's show. You can subscribe to reminders via email by clicking on the link in the description so you don't miss a show. It usually goes with out like late night before or on Saturday. And you can also find the show on Twitter and Instagram at Pub Talk Live. And if you'd like to support the show, you can find a link to the Patreon near the end of the video description down below. You can support the show for as little as $1 per episode or $2 per month. Also, I wanted to mention I launched a new newsletter last week that features the all the virtual author and writing events that I can find every week. It goes out on Sunday and it has all the events for Monday through Sunday, the following Monday through Sunday. So if you want to sign up for that, go to sarahnicholas.substack.com. That's the first time saying that out loud. Just make sure you spell Sarah Nicholas right. It's Sarah with an H, Nicholas with no H. And it's free to everyone. It's just something that I'm passionate about. So I hope you enjoy it. All right. We're going to bring on our guest co-host, a longtime romance reader and lover of the genre of romance in all its forms. Joy operates Joyfully Reviewed, which turns 13 in August, is known throughout Romancelandia for its honest and professional romance reviews. When Joy doesn't have her head buried in a romance book, scouring Twitter or Instagram, searching for new to her romance authors or watching reality shows, she can be found much to their disgust, trying to capture candid photos or videos of her fur babies. So please welcome to the show, Joy.
Hi, hello. Everyone. Hi, Sarah.
I'm so excited to have you on.
I'm excited to be here. I'm really, really excited.
So Joy and I have known each other online and occasionally in person for like several years. Yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that probably when we bring Bev on. Sorry, I was like copying the link for today's poll in the comments, but I copied it in the wrong place. Okay. So just to get started, the viewer poll for today is, what speed do you listen to audiobooks at? If of course you listen to audiobooks. So if you haven't voted on that, that poll is going to close in about 20 minutes. So make sure you go over and just click on that and we'll talk about that at the end. All right. We have a lot of people here today. We have Deborah and Angel and then some of my regulars, Jen Morris. I think you know Jen Morris.
Hi, Jen. Yes.
And Jessica Baker.
Hi, everybody. All right.
Welcome, everyone. So if this is the first time watching the show, we start with some news items from around the publishing industry, and we have a little chat about them. And then in the second half of the episode, we interview our special guest. So we'll introduce her in a little bit. So let's just jump right into news. How about that?
Yes.
Sound good?
let's see what's going on.
Yeah. Author Melissa De La Cruz and Disney Publishing announced a new collaboration that promises original storytelling and diverse voices. Melissa De La Cruz Studio will work with authors to create original content for multiple platforms.
This is just a question. You know, I find it very interesting because I've seen Melissa's name about, but she's kind of real, like kind of quiet, I guess. So when I saw this, I was like, sometimes you're just like, oh my goodness, what things people have going on behind the scenes. It's just really exciting. I have Lisa Lucas, the National Book Foundation's executive director, will start a new role as senior vice president and publisher of Pantheon and Shockin' Books, two literary imprints of Penguin Random House. She will make the transition at the new year. I follow her on Twitter. She also has one of, she has a Nebulon like us.
She has a what? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Really?
They look the same. Yes.
We should have a club.
I was thinking about that. Okay.
So Joy and I have the same breed of cat. And so when I see the pictures of Joy's cat, I'm like, that's Athena. That's my cat. I don't know about yours. I heard this is a common trait of the breed. She really likes to be pet while she eats. Is that, does your cat do that?
No, you know what? Not so much. I don't think I've really done it, but he talks. He talks. So when he wants his snacks, when he wants his food, when he wants his what, he tells you. So yeah
they are very vocal.
Had like a talker, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it really does feel like she's talking to me because she'll like meow.
They are.
Like, what?
Really are.
But yeah, I'm really excited about this Lisa Lucas news, though. We're going to have to ask Lisa about her cat, too. and I got to meet her very briefly. She and Jason Reynolds were both in Orlando at the same time.
Oh.
And they did an event. It was the year that Jason was up for, you know, the National Book Award. And they did like an in-conversation event with one of the local publishers here. And it was really great. And I just like, I could listen to her talk about publishing forever, because she's so smart and she has like so many you know, like she just knows so much about the industry that I just really enjoyed that.
I just found her maybe in the last 6 months, but you know, so I was like following. I don't think I followed her because of the publishing. I think it was something else, and that's when I found out she was, you know, in the publishing. I was like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And so I was just so excited to see about, you know, her news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I'm excited to see what she does with it. All right, so we got some not so great news now. Mm-hmm. It always hurts me to do this. Scholastic sales dropped 40% for their quarter ending in May. It's their fourth quarter of their economic year, so it's kind of confusing. But the largest decline was in children's book publishing with a 49% decrease. And if you follow publishing, you know that Scholastic does the book fair, right?
And yes.
If you remember that from your childhood too.
Oh, yes.
So yes. That was the biggest drop, as they saw 79% drop in book fair revenue and 59% in books club sales. Mm. So, yeah, that's
a lot of things have happened.
I didn't realize though. Yeah, for sure. I didn't realize how much of their bottom line would be affected by, the book fairs. So that tells you a lot, right? About like how much money those book fairs bring in.
Yes. I mean, even, you know, when you look at it, you're like, oh, it's not, but yeah, $5, $10 here, you know, people are buying, you know, multiples, $25. I mean, yeah. And again, it's so far reaching what has happened, you know, with COVID, that it's like, it's mind blowing. Like the things that have gone by the, you're like, oh my goodness. And that industry affects this industry that affects that industry. Yeah.
We have a couple of people chiming in. I just wanted to say hello to everyone. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of first timers here. I think a lot of people come to see Miss Bev, which I
understand
that. So welcome everyone. If this is your first time here, later or after the show ends, we're going to drop the links for all the news items that we're discussing in the description. So you'll be able to read more if you want to read more about any of the different pieces. And also my community that usually watches the show, they, a couple months ago, they gave themselves a name. So they call themselves Pubbers. So if you see people say, hey, Pubbers.
Okay.
Those are the regular watchers. I know. I was so excited when it happened. I was like, oh, so yeah, all right.
Okay. Yeah,
you have good news.
Yes, I have good news from the Library of Congress. They've announced the winner of their prize for American Fiction, which is a lifetime achievement prize. The honor goes to Colson Whitehead, the youngest honoree of this prize, and also the first author to win two Pulitzers for consecutive works of fiction. That is quite impressive. I can barely put two words together.
Come on, guys.
Enough for someone says, oh, this is great. Let me give this, this needs a prize.
You've been running one of the best romance blogs for 13 years. So come on.
And romance is my passion. So,
yeah, I mean, it's not two Pulitzers, but it's pretty good.
I'll take it.
Yeah, he's really killing it lately. And so I love seeing people like succeed, and you know, and especially people
have hard work,
what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Jay has joined us. Hey, Jay, one of my regulars.
Hey, Jay.
Oh, I do have a t-shirt, actually. Jennifer, thanks for bringing it up. There's a link in the description. I think it says merch. And so there are Pubber t-shirts. Oh, okay. I just launched them like 2 weeks ago. I just kind of like quietly launched them. I didn't want to make a big deal about them. But yeah, there's a link in the description if you want to check it out. Different kind of library news. Yeah. Library leaders and supporters are urging Congress to include public libraries in a second round of coronavirus economic relief bills. Local budget shortfalls have left libraries to grapple with severe cuts, furloughs of staff, and reduced operations just when communities need the services the most, Senator Reid said when he introduced the bill. So I'm going to leave, like I said, the link is going to be in the description later tonight. But there's a lot more information in the article about how you can, you know, call your elected officials to encourage them to include libraries in this. And if you don't know, I work at a library, so I care about it.
Yeah, it's important. I mean, I got my first romance book in a library.
Yeah.
On the little steel rounder that they had, all the books. Oh, that's like, awesome. Yes, yes.
There's one that's like, when you walk in my library, it's kind of off to the side, and it's this weird shelf because it doesn't match any of our other furniture. Mm-hmm. And it's just got like a whole bunch of paperback romances on it. If you don't know, a lot of libraries are funded by tax revenue, which has gone down because spending has gone down. You know, people aren't going to bars, going to vacation, going, you know, all kinds of things. So and they were not included in that first round of economic relief. So they definitely need it. So make sure you support your libraries. I mean, there are a lot of things to call your representatives about right now. So just add that to the list, right?
It's important. It really is important because that is like the last bastion of what is free. I would say almost free. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter who, just walk into, check out your book. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. And I've seen since people have been home, I've noticed that I've noticed there's been an uptick, at least around my particular county, and I've noticed other readers have been really, you know, putting those books on either in digital or they're putting their holds on, and it's really, so people are really utilizing the libraries, like, especially in these times like these, yeah, when money can be a little tight and, you know, you still want to read your book, but maybe you might not have that extra. So it's there. So yes, supporting is very important. Yeah.
And especially like there are so many people, like a lot of people think libraries, books, and that, I mean, that's a big part of what we do, but also we provide so many social services and internet access for so many people that don't have it.
That's true. That's true.
Homework help, like all kinds of stuff. Like I work in an urban library, and so we mm-hmm. have a very large homeless population mm. who uses the library to get all their social services. They use it, you know. Mm. We have a social worker even who works with them and helps them get their services. Yeah. And then they also just use it to check their email, and some of them use it to apply for jobs and learn job skills. So
good point. Good point. Yes.
I'm going to get off my soapbox here. Okay. And move on to the next item.
No, but it's true. It's true.
Yeah. All right. So I have the next item. Mark Dawson revealed on his podcast last week that he had purchased 400 copies of his book, The Cleaner, in a temporarily successful plan to get in the top 10 position in the Sunday Times bestseller chart. So that's like the UK version of New York Times. bestseller. He saw he was in the 13th spot, so he asked overseas readers if they would buy the books from him if he purchased them. After he spoke about it, and then people kind of started raising questions about it, Nielsen Bookscan investigated the purchase and has revoked the honor and issued a correction.
Hmm.
Yeah. So did you hear about this at all, Joy?
When I read that, I was like, that got past me. Yeah. How different is that from a publisher kind of doing the same thing, but not really talking about it?
The New York Times, if they see any bulk buy, so this is what they would call a bulk buy. They kind of like take note of it, and no one of course knows exactly what the New York Times like considers what on in their list, but if a book does hit the list and it has bulk buys, it will have a little cross symbol next to it, indicating that it made it with bulk buys.
Interesting.
And someone was tweeting about this, and they thought it was the New York Times bestseller charts. And I was like, 400 copies wouldn't make a dent.
That's it.
It definitely wouldn't move you up six spots.
That's interesting.
But this was kind of a big conversation in the indie book community, especially Mark Dawson has a big following in the indie community. Very successful indie author, and he teaches classes and all kinds of things.
Right.
And so I think maybe that's part of why it was such a big conversation, is because you have a person who teaches classes on how to be a bestseller, and then he goes and buys copies of his own book to make himself a bestseller. You know?
Huh.
So it's not a great narrative.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Awkward. I totally missed that. Okay.
It definitely is an interesting conversation. The link that I'm going to drop below is from The Guardian, and it's a pretty good like breakdown of the situation and the conversations happening around it. And his defense, he's saying that he bought it for these international readers.
If that's your platform and you're circumventing the platform, then how are you? Mm.
It's a weird
conversation.
Weird situation for sure. All right. I made the news section today a little bit shorter than we usually do because I knew people would be excited to get to Miss Bev, which I am too. So Joy has the last piece of news for us, and it's a very delicious piece of news.
Yes, it is. So there was this highly anticipated debut author last year at RWA that I was seeing a lot about, J.C. Lee. And she's Asian American, she's owned Voices, and I was like, there was a lot of buzz. So, you know, you get all excited. I loved it. And I'm not a cartoon person cover, but this one really got me. So I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, you're panting, you're waiting for it. So the book finally came out, as it should have been, I think last Tuesday. And with it, an announcement that Daniel Dae Kim, for those of you who do not know, from Lost and from Hawaii Five-O and from The Good Doctor, he's optioned the Own Voices romance author J.C. Lee's newly released romantic comedy, A Sweet Mess, and is attached to Star. I love it because both of the main characters in A Sweet Mess are Asian Americans. He's very, very, he's become very, behind the scenes and bringing diverse content, especially with Asian Americans in The Good Doctor, but diverse characters, fully fleshed out story lines, what he produces and brings to the table. So I'm really excited for this news to be because I cannot wait to see, number one, to see him. Hello. And then to see who they have as the heroine. So it's going to be very interesting. So, yeah.
He's got quite a jawline.
I was like, hello. So that's, he's quite, like this.
Yeah.
Like you want to nibble on it. And with that being said, we have Miss Bev waiting in the wings, if we don't want to have her waiting.
Beverly Jenkins is the recipient of the 2017 Romance Writers of America Nora Roberts Lifetime Achievement Award, as well as the 2016 Romantic Times Reviewer's Choice Award for Historical Romance. She's been nominated for the NAACP Image Award in Literature. It was featured both in the documentary Love Between the Covers and on CBS Sunday Morning. Since the publication of Night Song in 1994, she has been leading the charge for multicultural romance and has been a constant darling of reviewers, fans, and her peers alike, garnering accolades for her work from the likes of The Wall Street Journal, People Magazine, and NPR. And please welcome to the show, Miss Bev. Hello.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for coming.
I'm excited.
I'm so excited. So I just wanted to talk about like the first time I ever saw you. I don't remember exactly what event it was because they all blend together for me, but it was when I was first really kind of getting involved with the industry and I wasn't reading romance yet. And I didn't really know a lot of romance authors. Like I knew who Nora Roberts was, you know, but like, I didn't know a lot about romance. And there was an event and I was in the bathroom. I had long hair then. I was like smoothing down my hair because it's Florida and it's frizzy or wherever it was. I don't even know if it's Florida. Anyway, and someone came by and was like, don't worry about it. You look fabulous or something like that. And I was like, oh, thank you. I was like, that was so nice, you know? And then I get to the event and they bring her up on stage and it's Beverly Jenkins. I know.
I do a lot of incognito kinds of things like that. So. Obviously, we're looking fabulous. Otherwise, I wouldn't have said anything. So,
you know? I was like, okay. that was a really great. It was a great introduction to me to the romance world. You know.
Okay. Good.
And then you're on the show today because of some late night tweeting between you and Joy.
And Romancelandia at night.
Yes. I responded, like, you two at night. You gotta come on the show.
we're talking about rabbits.
With our rabbit, I did not know. I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, oh, that's my horn. And she's like, no, they're really up here eating my garden. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, Joy loves rabbits. When you see her, she's got her little ears on. So I don't know if she has pet rabbits or not.
You know, that's so interesting. It only came because of the AOL bunnies, and that's how I used to express myself. But I'm a cat person, and so people come up with the bunnies, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not so. But now everything is rabbit.
Yeah. Okay.
It's iconic, so I have to deal with it. So yeah.
Sort of fell into it. Yeah.
Yes.
Sort of like I fell into romance. Okay. That's but yeah, the rabbits were like, so the problem is I have this rabbit in my backyard. And as I was telling Joy and Sarah, rabbits reproduce every 6 weeks. In fact, I've learned all this doing rabbit hole research. the females can get pregnant 2 days after giving birth. So I am generations of rabbits in my backyard
eating your plants,
and this has been going on for years.
And they're not going anywhere.
They like, okay, they eat my lilies, and they'll eat just the tip, which is the flower. So when the lilies grow up, yeah, you just get leaves and stems. Now, these suckers can cost $15 a piece.
Okay.
So your rabbits need to get a job.
Okay. Or bring something to the table.
Get a job. Buy your own lilies. Put them in your own backyard.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
So, okay. So I bought four new clematis vines.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Towers to go with them. Had my blue eyes on, put the towers up. Grew them on the patio till they got big.
Okay.
Put them in the ground on the with the new towers.
Oh, no.
And for about 10 days.
Oh.
They were fine.
Okay.
No, they were lulling me into a false sense of security. I went out there 2 days ago and there's nothing left but the root mound.
That's
and my beautiful new towers.
Oh no.
And just
hopefully, you know, they'll grow back next year and it'll be like, okay, rabbits meat, chicken wire.
Okay, gotcha. So, I mean, you warned them. You're giving them
because they're still alive. Yeah. You know, only because I'm a kind-hearted woman that I haven't had my godson who has suggested bringing over his rabbit-eating
because there will be some
German Shepherd.
Poor.
It'll be like one bite.
There'll be some generations missing.
Oh, yeah. It'll be like those hares that I had. You know, the gulls that I had on my page that were eating those hares.
Yeah.
I did not know gulls would eat hares, but
no, I did. I was shocked. I was very shocked
and impressed. Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Said, bring them on.
I know. You never know what you're going to find on my timeline on Twitter. So,
Joe was like, leave them alone. Those are my minions.
I was like, those are my minions. They're coming over there to see you. Like, you better get them out of here before they won't be anymore.
I said, oh my. I know. Well, we'll see. Like I said, I'm kind-hearted. I was out having my coffee yesterday, and she sort of hopped up and hopped right, you know, for me to looked at me and I went boo. But she sort of, and it's just like, nah, she didn't do nothing. So she just hopped off.
She said, we've been told.
Really?
We've been told.
Really? Come on now. So anyway.
All right.
Well, so that's how we came to be.
Questions for you, but you mentioned something just now I wanted to ask about. You said you fell into romance.
Yeah,
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
I, people who heard me speak, so saying, oh God, this story again. I had no intentions of being a writer. I was working in a library. That was my life goal was to work in a library, as you know, we say on the east side of Detroit, the library.
Yes.
And I worked at the library at Michigan State University when I finished school. And I was working for a private library for a pharmaceutical company in Ann Arbor. And one of my colleagues had just gotten published with a sweet romance. So I, you know, told her about this little manuscript that I was writing on for me, because I wasn't looking for publication. The market was basically closed to, you know, African-American romance. We'd had a few with Sandra Kitt and Elsie Washington back in Vivian Stevens' heyday. But we didn't have a whole lot. So I was writing just for me because I was in a library. My life goal was made. I'm fine. Mm-hmm. So she looked at it and my colleague looked at it. And she said, you know, you ought to get this published. And I was like, well, where? You know, so some kind of way, and I cannot tell you how I found Vivian. She was my first agent. She had gotten out of publishing and was running a small agency.
Excuse me. Natalie?
And you okay over there, Joy? And I sent her my little raggedy manuscript. And she called me at the desk because I was working the reference desk. She called me at the desk not more than a week later, 10 days later, and said she wanted to represent me. So that's how I sort of fell into this because, you know, I wasn't, like I said, my life goal was complete, you know, but sometimes the universe says, here, put this hat on, see if it fits. And it did. And so now, what, 26 years later? And 45 or 46 books later.
Wow.
I'm sitting here talking to you all. So I'm having fun. Having a lot of fun.
Yeah. And your readers are having a lot of fun too.
Yes. And I love them. And were it not for them and their devotion, and I know they're out there, so waving at everybody from Bevyville, I would not be here. They are responsible for, you know, everything that I am and everything that I can be and everything that I will be. It's because of their support and their love and their, you know, when I'm on deadline, Miss Bib, did you eat today? You know,
right. Yeah.
They keep me honest. Okay. And I'm blessed to have them in my life.
Yeah. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Question. Did you have another, like some authors, like you said, your library was going to be your, you know, librarian was your vocation. Did you have any other books that you had written that were, you know, land in the fight, or you actually had to start now writing more romance when you got Vivian and got a contract?
No, the first book that I was writing was Night Song.
Wow. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had this Buffalo Soldier, and I had this Overland educated school teacher. I mean, it was awful, of course, as most first books are. But that was the book I was writing on. And this was, you know, I always say BC before children.
Okay.
And, you know, it was my husband would come home from work and he'd go play tennis. And, you know, I would be in the back either writing or reading because I was working at the University Library, which is an awesome thing because, you know, you get stuff first and I can go back and catalog in and grab all the sci-fi and all the fantasy stuff and take it home. And, you know, as long as I didn't spill Coca-Cola on it or anything, you know, I could give it back and they could put it on the shelves the next day.
Right.
So I'm working on this love story just for me. And that was the first book that, it was not the first book that I submitted. Sure, I'm old. I can't remember stuff. Oh. I did send Avon a contemporary before I sold Night Song.
Gotcha.
And I tell people this. That story was so bad, so bad, that the rejection letter probably beat me home from the post office. I mean, that's how bad that thing was. But it turned out to be my first romantic suspense. It turned out to be Edge of Midnight.
Oh.
Because I'm a firm believer that things have a time.
True.
Okay.
I agree.
So I had to have Indigo published, which was my third book.
Gotcha.
Because the characters in Edge of Midnight are the descendants of the characters in Indigo.
Gotcha.
So everything in its time and in its place. And people think Indigo is my first book, but it's not. It's the third book.
Gotcha.
Night Song is first book. So it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah.
The connections met. You know, lots of fabulous people, especially in the romance genre, especially with my readers. I got readers who name their kids after the men in my books, which is kind of interesting.
Tattoos.
You know, lots of 27-year-old chasers running around in the country now. So, yeah. I'm having fun. Yeah.
So I have a question from my Patreon supporter. If you support my Patreon, you get to submit questions ahead of time for the show. So Jalen asked, what is your best advice for writing romantic tension, even in a novel where the romance is a subplot?
Make your characters real. Think about what makes you as a person tense. Because, I mean, basically what you're doing is you're playing God with your characters. You're creating them. You're giving them life. You're breathing life into them and all of that. So have the tension, and you can tie it to whatever you want to tie it to. You can tie it to their, you know, backstory. You can tie it to their job. You can tie it to, you know, it's one of the great things about romance is that we can write anything. Mm-hmm. We can write tension, we can write paranormal, we can write mysteries, we can write, you know, erotica, we can write every kind of a relationship and every level that is in that relationship. Mm-hmm. We have to do it well in romance. because our readers expect good stories. So I would also suggest to him to read some romance. Read some suspense. Look at the tension. Look at how the characters move around in the story. I have a small theater background, so I do a lot of blocking. I do a lot of moving around and stuff. I mean, look at it not as fiction, but look at it as real. And I think that will give life to the story, life to the characters, and maybe make it a little bit easier. But writing ain't easy. It's hard work.
My goodness.
Writing relationships. I mean, I guess probably that's why the divorce rate is so high in the United States, right?
I don't see how you guys do it. I mean, to be honest with you, I've always felt that I know I'm not a writer. I can write an email, a paragraph. I can write an idea. But to sit down and write dialogue and create a world, and that's why I find romance so fascinating. And since I was little, that no matter what's going on around me, I can pick up a romance novel and I can disappear in that for that small amount of time. And that's hard because that's somebody that has you don't know what their life is, but they wrote something that resonated with, you know, some little girl and guy, you know, and it's just, I find that, so I know it has to be hard. That's just,
I mean, it is, it's difficult. And then, you know, if you have a body of work, not writing the same story, you know, I try and give my readers a different flavor with each story, and it's difficult. I mean, and you know, and 60,000 words, 70,000 words, 80,000 words, different every time. You try not to just change the names of the characters and write the same book over and over again.
Which I think
some people think that's what we do in romance.
Oh my goodness.
That and that we write with crayons. there's a lot of hate out there. A lot of hate out there. But, you know, we don't really care about that. We know that we are the largest selling genre on the planet.
Yes.
We know that, especially in this time of the pandemic, that people are looking for romance. They're looking for that hope. They're looking for that HEA, not necessarily because it's fantasy. Right. Like some people say, oh, women, you know, fantasy. Blah, blah, blah.
No.
You know, they're looking for it just so they, like you said, you can escape and have a good story and you know how it's going to end.
But the characters, right? And you're like,
yeah, but how is she going to do this?
Right.
You know, how is she going to, or how is he going to do it? Because we got guys writing romance too. You know, how are they going to move this story
right
to the point where, you know, you get that HEA at the end? So,
and that's believable. You're like, okay.
And believable, like, yeah.
Oh, that
yeah.
was so satisfying. You're like,
oh. I know. So, yeah. We'll make you cry. We'll make you cry. We'll make you laugh. We'll make you go out and bake. Food stories. So
anything you want. I just find it fascinating, you know. And when you also, another thing that I find very interesting is longevity. And like you said, to try to give you something different each time, you know. And
because
not to say,
you know, the readers demand it. The readers don't want to read the same story over and over again. You know, and we as readers who are also, you know, we're writing, we don't want to read the same story. We don't want to write the same story over and over again.
So, yeah.
So, you know, I love what we do. I love the genre. I love the different levels and the different personalities and how many new branches there are on the romance tree now.
Yes.
Because when I started, it was like, historical, contemporary. That's it.
I
and suspense. That was
you.
Three. Yeah. You know, now we got a little bit of everything. And
I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah. And also, too, it used to be strictly female centered. And now it isn't. I mean, you've got anybody who is falling in love, no matter the identity. is writing romance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So yes. It's no longer strictly, I mean, yes, 80% is still female-centered, but that's not the only branch now. Mm-hmm. And it's starting to look a lot more like the country insofar as who's falling in love. And everybody deserves and gets an HEA. We've been dealing with that, you know, with RWA and all that, but it hasn't stopped people from writing their stories. Mm-hmm. And those stories are important. You're talking about being on a soapbox. Let me get off my soapbox. You know, I get out of here.
Yeah, I told
we'll be still here till on Friday and I'll be still preaching.
I know.
It's important.
I know when Joy and I talked earlier this week, you had something that you wanted to talk to Ms. Beth about, right? It's okay.
I done put her to sleep.
No, I had so many other questions that I was just like, okay, so tell me what I said to you, because I had another question too, but I want to make sure that's the most important one that I was going on. I'm not sure. There were actually two things, but I think I'll ask you something that I actually thought of too. When you started, I wouldn't say that you, well, I could say there were maybe 10 romance authors that I could, you know, black romance authors that I could pick out, you know, that I would look, and there are more, you know, but I just wanted to know you as a person, how do you feel more, that your community as a whole, that you're not out there talking by yourself? Because I know at one point you were talking by yourself, you and however many, and now you have all these other voices,
you know,
you can kind of lay back a little bit.
Yes,
you know?
I can pass the torch. I can, you know, be the old lady on the porch now, and, you know, yelling when I need to. I'm so proud of these young women who are now writing. Because they're so much smarter than I was. I mean, you know, they got all of this political stuff down. Yeah, I did the political thing in the 60s, blah, 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 right, 60s and 70s. But, you know, to see not just, you know, black women, but all these women of color.
Yes.
Who are coming up and demanding.
Very much so. Yes.
And have the chops to be able to make the demands. It's an awesome thing.
Yeah.
Alyssa and Alicia Rye and, you know, Alexis Daria and Rebecca Weatherspoon.
Oh, yeah, Priscilla.
Vanessa Riley and, you know, Chris Oliveris and, you know, Adriana Herrera. And I mean, all of these women.
Yes, yes.
Who bring fabulous own voices, stories to the table.
Yeah, it's Harper Miller. I just saw all of these.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's
and because, Harper and Tasha Harrison and, you know, and all of these women.
Right. But you know, Ms. Bev, it is because you had the courage, to me, I'm in awe because I am a reader. And when I first saw that, because I'm a historical reader.
Okay.
So when I first saw my first Beverly Jenkins book on the shelf, and I had this black characters that were beautiful, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, you know, so representation matters, you know, and I believe that seeing you and seeing
Brenda and Sandra
Pinero and it's just these ladies that were out there, and and all of this that came to me, what I've seen in the years that I've been out there, is that there's this comfortability that here's these ladies that were out there, and they were like, you know what, make your mark.
Yeah.
You know, and when you got your, I have to tell you, when you got your RWA Lifetime Achiever, I wasn't there, but I was at home crying. I was like in tears.
I was crying too, girl.
And I just see all of these people that have have had the courage to go forward with their careers and demand because of, you know, we have to know where we came from.
Right.
You know, so you have to acknowledge, you know, when they say, oh, I didn't know there was Black romance. Right? Really?
Yeah, where you been?
Okay, yeah, I mean, we've had actual, you know.
Yeah, I've been out here since 94.
You know.
You know, but, Sandra was out here in the early 90s.
Yes. Our L.A. Banks, you know, when she was writing with her. So I just wanted to know how you felt, like, you know, you're just like, okay.
We talked about that, you know, on Twitter. I don't know. You know, we talk about so much stuff on my timeline. I'm glad I can, you know, I don't worry about the genre going forward. You know, I don't worry about the voices going forward because there's so many young women and men and, you know, people of all identity who are writing.
That's quite the statement.
Mm-hmm. That, you know, I don't have to worry about, you know, they're not being anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, once I hit the big library in the sky, that there will still be, you know, people coming up, you know, and they are taking care of the generation behind them.
Yes.
You know, your job is to make the path wider.
Yes.
I agree. That's your job.
I agree.
And I have tried very, very hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping, and I, you know, I don't even have to worry that the young women who are coming up behind me will do the same.
They're fierce.
For the young women who are coming up behind them. If not, I'll be back to haunt their asses.
I'm loving the mentoring. I'm loving the different ideas that are coming up, like Sarah with the pitch wars and all these things, like trying to find that. And, you know, I'm looking at blurbs in tweets that I want the book and they haven't even written it yet. I mean, there was no opening for that to happen before. No. You had to be, you know, in the inside.
So. Right, right. The gate's open.
Yeah.
You know, and I thank the indie girls for that.
Yes.
You know, for blowing the gate, blowing the doors off the gates and saying, well, okay, you know what? My story's fine. I'm going to go over here and make this money.
Yes.
I'm going to grow this readership.
Yes.
You know, then publishing's like, hey, can you come play in our yard now? You know, so, you know, I thank them for, you know, their fortitude and, you know, we call it their testicular fortitude to go out there and get it done without a net.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So, I just want to mention, so Brenda Drake, who's the founder of Pitch Wars, is actually watching, and she commented, she said, I was there for RWA Award, and Bev's speech was powerful, and the room was moved. It was a great moment.
Yeah, it's one of my... You know, it seems like, you know, for the last 3 or 4 years, every time I got on the mic, people were weeping, right? So I think that's one of my superpowers, was to make ballrooms full of people weep.
We were behind the scenes talking to each other on messaging. I'm like, are you watching?
So thanks, Brenda, very, very much for that, those nice words. Appreciate it.
To switch gears a little bit, I know how much you've researched and, you called yourself in one interview, I think, a kitchen table historian, right?
Yeah.
What is something like the most jaw-dropping thing that you've discovered while researching for a book?
It will always be, no, there's a lot of stuff, but. The main thing will be the idea that Indigo grew out of. The fact that a free man sold himself into slavery to be with a woman is the most heart-stopping, jaw-dropping, oh my God kind of moment. You know, and my husband and I, you know, I lost him in 03, but, you know, I talked to him about it and he was like, baby, I love you, but I don't know if I love you like that.
Is that
and I said the same thing too, you know, I love you, boo, but I don't know. But to me, that is the ultimate testament of love.
Yes, yes.
The ultimate testament that you will give up your freedom and not be, and because of how awful slavery was, there's no guarantee that she was going to be with you the next day.
Good point. Good point. Yeah.
There's no guarantee.
Yeah.
So for me, that was the most impressive thing. And there's been a lot of stuff, you know, like the black chef that first made potato chips and, you know, the Great Exodus of 1879, which is the, and you know, and I, this is Jenkins July, which is the ladies who started this in awe of that. One of the things that I've been posting Jenkins July questions on my Facebook page. And one of the questions that I asked the other day was what the books meant to the readers. And they had me crying. How these books have affected their perception of themselves, how these books have impressed their children when they pass along the history. But one of the ladies who's who has a PhD in history said she has been studying history all her life and never once was the Great Exodus of 1879 ever talked about in any class that she took at any level of her career. And this was the first mass movement of African-Americans out of the South. This was before the Great Migration of 1900 when everybody went north. These people went west. So it's affected, the books are like, and the history and, you know, and it's, I love what I do. I do.
I saw this comment, I wanted to read it, from Alan. Beverly, I read my mom a chapter a day of one of your books, and I cry three or four times each chapter. I have to tell my mom, oh, Beverly got me again.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not crying for pain.
No.
You know, sometimes it's crying just for seeing how clever our ancestors were, how smart they were, how innovative they were. That was one of the points in some of the responses to my question. Because Black history is not taught in schools. We're taught about, you know, three people, maybe four.
Yeah.
And so with these books, I'm teaching them, I'm teaching myself, learning a lot with me and my kitchen table and my history books, right? So it's not always about pain. And I think that's where it's one of the downfalls or downsides of what we've been not only taught, but what we've seen on the screen. It's been all pain.
Yes.
You know, we're there. Where are the Black dragon riders? Are, you know, the Black rom-coms? Where are, you know, slices of life that we have lived since 1619 to present day? So we get to see us on the pages. It's beautiful. I'm looking at the stuff coming across the screen. I'm very, very honored to be able to gift my readers of all races and all ages the things that I find to put my stories together with. I'm learning right along with them. And I've said this 1,000 times, it's edutainment. Entertainment,
yeah,
education, you know. And there's no test on Friday. So, you know, you can learn it and internalize it and share it and be in awe of it and love it and support it and pass it on.
Yeah. Go deeper.
Go deeper with the resources.
You never know where you're going to go.
You know?
I'm just like, oh, wow, that's interesting. And where did that come from? And I that's another thing. When I was growing up, I always had a great vocabulary, but your vocabulary is open.
I'm gonna make you go get a dictionary. Yes. Yes. You know, and that's part of it too, because.
And I want to know what that means. I'm like, yeah. I can't go any further until I find out what that means.
Yeah, I will make you go get a dictionary. And that was one of the things that one of the ladies said early in my career. She's like, Miss Bev, I have to read your books with a dictionary. And I'm like, that's a good thing. I mean, yes. romance writers and readers, we make great scrabble players. all kinds of esoteric kind of words. And, you know, people are like, what is that, a really word? Yes, it's a word. Look it up.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I ask every guest on my show this question. Usually I try to give them a little bit of heads up, but we got so into talking before the show that I forgot to mention it. But the question I ask every guest is, what is the most important book you've read and why? And important being defined however you want to define it. I know, that's why I try to give a little heads up, but...
Probably, I mean, it's a series. It's the Journal of Negro History. And it's important in the sense that these journalists and historians were chronicling our story when nobody else cared. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my history is tied to that. Mm-hmm. When I worked at the MSU library back in the 70s, I worked in a graduate library. I was responsible for all the kids who were putting the books away and putting up the new shelving and, you know, paging and all of that. Mm-hmm. And at lunchtime, I would take armfuls of the Journal of Negro History out to the river, a river that runs through state's campus. Mm. And I'd sit on the banks of the river with my lunch, and I just looked through these books. Little did I know that I was preparing myself for this part of my life.
Yeah.
50 years ago. So probably the most important has been that contribution by those educators and journalists and historians like Benjamin Quarles. And, Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Mm-hmm. So we are pretty much out of time, but I just saw a question I wanted to address is, have you been approached by any movie studios?
Yeah.
And I know you announced late last year, right?
Yeah. Sony, through the good graces of the ladies at Ribadas, hooked me up with Sony. So they're looking at Forbidden.
That was the book that I have my notes. I swear I'm sitting right here. That if you ask me what book, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Forbidden. So we're waiting for, excuse me, you know, the Rona to let people go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
So we can deal with the next phase of that.
Oh my God.
Got an awesome showrunner, and I just think it's going to be fabulous. And so we also have people looking at the Blessing series, which is my small town women's fiction series. So I'm just waiting. I'll let you know when we need to get our dresses for the premiere.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're going to show up.
We're going to
show up and show out. But it's very, you know, like that's I said, at my acceptance speech for the Nora Award, you know, to be a descendant of a people who were forbidden by law to utilize the written word,
yeah,
and to be here doing all of these things that I'm doing with the written word. It's truly amazing. It's truly, truly amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think earlier in the chat, someone actually dropped a link to the 2017 talk. So if you want to go check that out, Yeah, I definitely recommend it.
Bring some tissue and you'll learn my game. You'll learn my Game of Thrones name.
That was such a great moment. All right, Miss Bev, thank you so much for coming. You can hang out if you want and chat with us afterwards, or you can go whatever you need to do. And Joy and I are just going to close up a couple of things. And thank you so much for joining. I'm so glad I got to have you on the show.
You're very, very welcome. Thanks for having me. It's hot under these lights. I think I'm going to back out. Okay. I'll see you guys on Twitter. That's where I'm off to right now. So I'll see you in a little while, okay?
Well, Ms. Bev, thank you so much for taking your Saturday night to do this, because this is really, really exciting for me. I am so excited. Very welcome.
And I want to thank everybody who showed up.
Yes.
To listen to the old lady from her porch. I appreciate you so much. All right, babies. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right.
What? Wow.
I know. I love her so much. So whenever I first started the show, I started putting together a list of like people that I wanted on it. And she was like one of the first people that I put on.
Oh, wow.
But I didn't really have like the guts to ask her until
Are you kidding me?
She's so nice, I know, but like until I kind of got, because I feel like I needed it to be good, the show to be good for her. You know what I mean? Okay. Like I wanted to
I get it. I get what you're saying.
Ready.
Okay. Well, it was perfect because when I saw that, I was like, what? Yeah, and then I was sitting up here. I was like, I didn't want to be bad. I didn't want to curse. I didn't want to say anything inappropriate. You know, calm down. Calm yourself down. Okay. But I just.
All right. So we just have a couple things to do before we say goodbye to everyone.
Okay.
So every episode, I do an audiobook of the week because I love audiobooks, and that's the only real reason. And so the one from this week is one I listened to last week. It's Song of Race and Ruin by Roseanne A. Brown, narrated by Bob and AJ Beckles. The cover is so gorgeous, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So a short summary from the publisher, the first in a gripping fantasy duology inspired by West African folklore, in which a grieving crown princess and a desperate refugee find themselves on a collision course to murder each other despite their growing attraction. So definitely go check that one out. I really enjoyed it. I listened to it very quickly because I just I kept listening to it even, you know, because I listen to audiobooks on my walk, and then if I'm really into them, I'll keep doing it as I'm getting ready for bed and all that kind of stuff. So, it's really good. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, and then we're going to talk about the viewer poll of the week. And I have to pull that up because I forgot to do it. We were just chatting so much before the show. I was like, oh, yeah.
Look, when are you going to get a chance to talk to Ms. Bev? Okay.
So there it is. Oh, I gotta change the screen a little bit. There we go.
Okay.
So the question was, if you listen to audiobooks, what speed do you listen to them at? So about half of people listen to them at regular speed. 39% listen up to 1.5, and 8.9% listen from 1.5 to 2. And I don't know, maybe two people listen to them faster than two times. Do you listen to audiobooks, Joy?
I have ADHD. And so I literally have to sit and I wander. And I've tried so many times to listen to audiobooks because I feel that it would be easier. At some point, I know that it's become a booming, you know, business. I remember audiobooks were being talked about with Felicia, the geeky blogger. And I remember that's where I learned about them years ago. But I've tried and I'm just like,
yeah.
So it's just not my shtick. I can't seem to concentrate.
This poll came about because we were talking about it in I Write for Book Riot, and we have a Slack where all the contributors are, and we were talking about the Book Writers Slack. Mm-hmm. And almost everyone I know who writes about audiobooks, like as a journalist, myself included, listens to them faster than regular speed. And I mentioned it to a group, like a social group last night, and they were shocked. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize. I thought everyone did, because I do. I listen to, my go-to is 1.8.
Is that because does that have something to do with cognitive? Like you're ahead of it?
For sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I when I first started, I kind of had a similar, I was like, I get too distracted. Like I can't focus on them. I'll start thinking about something else and won't be able to focus. And so part of it, I think, was just training myself to listen to them, right?
Gotcha.
But the other part was, when I started speeding it up, it became easier for me to process.
Huh.
Because it was more, to me, it was more like reading.
Oh, maybe I should try that.
The words are coming at me and I'm absorbing.
Okay.
But now when I listen to them at regular speed, like with a regular narrator, anyway, mm-hmm. like a professional narrator, I feel like it's so slow and I can't handle it. I'm like, it takes 3 weeks for you to say the next word. Like, why is it taking so long? So now I'm spoiled about it. Like I listened to an audiobook on CD, which I couldn't speed up. And I was like, come on. so that was really interesting for me to see the results of. And people were talking about the narrator, and I still feel like I absorb the performance. Like, I definitely have favorite narrators.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, if a book is particularly dense, if the subject is really heavy, or if an author reads the book, mm-hmm. because authors usually normal people talk faster than audiobook narrators.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'll listen to it at a slower speed.
Okay.
So for example, like I listened to Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, which he reads and is also very dense. And so I listened to that regular speed because I really had to just kind of like soak it in. You know?
Okay. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see. I'm going to go to the comments, see what people are saying in the comments.
Oh.
Jennifer says, I feel like 1.25 is more normal speech speed. I agree. Narrators have to enunciate so particularly. It seems to slow them down a tiny bit. Also, they get paid per finished performance hour. So that might be something to do with that too.
And then.
Jay says, one speed is so slow. I know. Liza said 1.25 to 2, mm-hmm. depending on the narrators. Narrators do make a difference. Sometimes you get narrator that's faster. Okay. I even listen to podcasts at 1.2 now, though, because I've gotten so used to it.
It's interesting. I can do the podcast more so than a book. I have to literally be reading for the words to sink into my head, but I can do a podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know what that says, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Frederick said, I never thought of speeding up my audiobooks. Yeah, most audiobook apps will let you do that. I recommend it. Like it's definitely changed my listening habits. Oh my gosh. Jay listens to 2 to 2.5. Wow. yeah. All right, cool. So we have a lot of different comments about that. So Deja said, I just discovered you can control the speed. Unlike Joy, the voices let my mind drift. It happens when I listen to it at one point. It happens to me a lot. Like I'm like, I can't focus because I do feel like I'm waiting.
That's for every sentence. I'll try to speed up. It's the speed. I'll try that and see, because that's interesting. I didn't know you could speed it up either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you can start at 1.2. And you probably won't really notice much of a difference, because Laura mentioned it took a while to get back up to the faster speeds. Okay. And definitely, yeah, I started at like 1.5 and then I went to like 1.5. Now I'm at 1.8. I've been holding there for like 3 years. So I feel like that's my sweet spot. Listened at 3 times before. Oh my gosh. if there's an accent, I can't listen to it fast. Yeah, that's true. Sometimes I do have to slow it down for British accents, especially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So now we just have we went a little bit long today, but like I could talk to both of you forever. So not a surprise. The book or reading quote of the week, this one is not about books specifically, but I think it's using book as a metaphor. But even a book can be dangerous in the wrong hands. And when that happens, you blame the hands, but you also read the book.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I had to sit with it for a minute.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think it's about like trying to understand what causes certain things to happen. I just thought it was interesting. I really liked it.
It is.
Yeah.
You're getting deep here, huh, Sarah? You're getting deep.
For the end of the show, you know.
That is interesting. I have to read that again. I have to look that up. That's interesting.
Yeah. All right, Joy, thank you so much for joining me tonight. The social media, the website for both of the guests is in the description down below. So make sure you go check them out. Check out Joy's blog. I think most of the people here knew Miss Bev, but yeah, definitely check her out.
Yeah. I have some giveaways that are coming up on Instagram, so look for that. Yes, I'm trying to get my Instagram going.
Nice. I love your Instagram.
Seriously, thank you so much for inviting me. And I really had this has been interesting, and I really loved it. I really did.
Yeah.
So
thank you very great. Much thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for coming. Okay, I have just a couple things I'm going to finish up. And okay. Thank you, Joy. Have a good night.
Okay. All right. Night, night.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. That was such a great episode. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like and subscribe right down there so you don't miss another episode. And make sure to tell your friends because that's how they find out about stuff like this. You can, this link will just stay good. You can watch the replay if you want, or you can share it with your friends. You can also subscribe to email reminders with the link in the description. And but the link for my Patreon to support the show is also in the description. And you can support for as little as $1 per episode. So check that out. Thank you so much to my Patreon supporters. It really it inspires me. And I'm so glad that you guys support the show. I'm so glad you keep coming back. And it really just fills me with energy to know that you support the show. Thank you so much. Like I mentioned, the social media guests for social media info for the guests is in the description right now. And you can find us on PodTalk Live at Twitter and also Instagram. And if you want to find out any more about the news items that we talked about, those links will be in the description right after the show ends. So thank you so much for watching, and stay safe, everyone. Wash your hands. Wear a mask, and I'll see you next time. Bye.